You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network. Visit jabberjawmedia.com for more shows like this one.
Hello, loyal managemental podcast listeners. This is Mike Mowry, your co-host from the other coast, and I am here to tell you about another great show on the Jabberjaw Media Podcast Network. For the last 10 years, Washed Up Emo has championed the unknown and forgotten from the emo slash post-hardcore music scene. They've been the home for all things emo through the era's many ups and downs. Talking with everyone from American Football, Jimmy Eat World, Braid, Taking Back Sunday, The Promise Ring, The Hotelier, Christy Front Drive, and Karate, to the Get Up Kids, Texas Is the Reason, Piebald, and Saves the Day. You can start from the beginning and pick your favorite episode. Every era of emo is represented, as well as every single viewpoint. Washed Up Emo is the definitive podcast for all things emo. Go listen now and check them out at jabberjawmedia.com. Hi, I'm Mike Mowry, president of Outer Loop Management and the co-host of this show. My team and I have been helping our musicians release their albums and EPs to get the biggest first week sales possible, and our strategies work. We consistently get first week debuts on the Billboard charts, leading to greater opportunities for my clients, great tours, media coverage, and industry attention. For the first time ever, I'm going to show you how I do it. Go to outerloopcoaching.com to learn more and register now for Release It Right, my online webinar on July 22nd, or Unleash It Right on July 22nd as well as July 29. Put in the code MENTALPOD5, all caps and all one word, and I will give you $5 off the price of either webinar, and I will give this show $5 as well. So you'll be supporting Blasco and me while also supporting your own career. Again, go to outerloopcoaching.com and use the code MENTALPOD5 to get $5 off either Release It Right on July 22nd or Unleash It Right on July 22nd and 29. Peace.
Hello and welcome to episode 24 of the Managemental Podcast, a weekly discussion on hot topics in the music biz for the up-and-comers, the brand newbies, the beginners, and aspiring rock stars of tomorrow. Yes, the struggle is real, my friends, but let us help you uncover some of the mystery that is this challenging business of rock and roll. I am your host, Mr. Blasco, and I am excited to be here today. As always, I am joined by my good friend, the co-host from the other coast, a record label owner, fellow artist manager, and Taekwondo 5th-degree green belt holder, Mr. Mike Mowry.
Yeah, baby. Chop, chop. That's me cutting through the wood with my Taekwondo skills.
In the last episode, we talked about Instagram basics. That was a really fun episode, so check it out if you haven't already. This week, we tackle some warning signs that you may see in a record deal. We know most of you are just starting out, and that first record deal can seem very rewarding on the surface, but in reality, it might just be a total nightmare. An article written by entertainment attorney Brian Pasco is the basis for today's conversation. As always, we will include any relevant links to the author and the article in the show notes. This is going to be killer, so let's get mental. So, Mike, what's new in your world?
You know, all is well, my friend. Here we are on episode 24 and rolling in. We're recording on the first day of summer, but it feels like the heat is already flaming in the kitchen. You know, summer's a time in the industry where things are always picking up and always busy. So I'm looking forward to it. Got a lot of fun things ahead of me. Got a lot of bands that, you know, we're starting to get into the nitty-gritty of rolling out records. And, you know, like as we talked about before we hit record, I'm cranking on my coaching stuff, which everybody that's, you know, listens to this loyally is well aware of. So that's exciting. And yeah, what about you? How's everything?
Good, man. You know, Warp Tour is, you know, kind of kicking off today, more or less. I mean, there was a few other shows, but I think today is kind of really more or less the kickoff. And will I see you at the APMAs?
That's the plan. We had such a good time last year. I don't see why I wouldn't return.
Nice. So I got that on the horizon. Just got back from tour. Got some Aussie shows coming up, and you know, got some more touring ahead of me. So it will be a very busy and exciting rock and roll summer.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad. You know, I love the fact that we get to jump around with various topics. And you know, what's so interesting to me about the state of the industry is we, you know, you and I have to cover and understand things like Instagram basics. But I had an artist actually going back and forth with me yesterday, asking me, you know, what his strategy should be for his band with, you know, boosting posts on Facebook. You know, and I kind of had to tell him, you know, it's always hard. You're just like, well, I know enough about it for us to get through it, but you need more in-depth insight to this stuff. And so, you know, I try to connect them with a couple of different resources. But that's what's so interesting to me about what you and I have to do and kind of the lay of the land with our job. But what we're talking about today, this is the stuff that I really like to talk about and really dig in on. You know, the things that fundamentally are at the core of what a manager should know and understand of, you know, things like record contacts and the red flags that come along with them.
Yeah, man. I mean, look, the record deal is, you know, is that pot of gold at the end of the rainbow that, you know, that bands are seeking. It's just that thing that everybody wants. It's the validation that someone else loves your music as much as you do. And so getting that record deal. So in that mindset or whatever, I've seen it, as I know you've seen it a million times, man. It's just like you get these bands that are just sort of starry-eyed at the onset of someone putting a record deal in front of their face. And, you know, they don't think about the little details, you know, and it's like, oh, we'll just worry about it later. We're just so excited. And it's like, it's just success from here on out, you know?
Yeah. Like, well, completely. It's funny. I mean, I was talking with one of my other managers here. We were talking to a younger developmental band that's, you know, being courted by a label, and they have an attorney, and that's sort of how we found out about them. And I'm sitting there talking to him about management, and I'm on the other end thinking, I don't even really think they know what a manager is supposed to do. They, you know, they know they should have one because their attorney's telling them they need one, and presumably their label wants one on board, so, you know, that person can help drive the ship. But it is, you know, and I think that's part of the resource that you and I provide, not only here, of course, you know, I plug it every week, but I wrote a book, you know, my little music management, you know, primer on the business of being a band, which talks more about this stuff. And, you know, educating yourselves is what's so important to both Blasco and I, which is, once again, you know, why we cover these things. But yeah, you get that deal in front of you, that record label contract, it's like, okay, we can overlook that now. You know, we just want to be signed. We want to get moving. And inevitably, these are the things that you do have to watch out for.
Yeah. So look, for your newbies, the basis of today is going over a few things that might appear to be in a record contract that are a red flag that you need to be aware of, right? So let's just blaze through these. Number one, inconsistencies between what you are told and what's in the contract. It may be on purpose or not, but just because the A&R gal at the label told you one thing doesn't mean the record deal you're asked to sign is completely consistent. An obvious example is if you're told you're getting an advance of $5K, but the agreement doesn't provide for an advance.
I mean, that's a pretty obvious one and kind of a funny one. You know, and that is one of those things that is always a challenge, when those conversations are happening and then what does come back on paper. And sometimes that stuff is lost a little bit in translation. Various labels do it completely different ways. Some of the indies, like myself, who can roll a little bit differently, you know, I can send a band an email with the outline of kind of what I'm thinking of and talking of, and then it gets moved to maybe a term sheet, which they might, you know, kind of give their signature on, and then maybe down the line we move to a long form. But, you know, so there can be one of those, let's say I had a conversation with a band and told them something, and then I go and tell the attorney who's drafting, you know, the term sheet or the contract, and maybe I forget a piece or two. So it is always smart to check that out. I don't see too many things where people blatantly, you know, tell you you're going to get a certain amount of money and then don't put that in the contract. Have you seen that?
No, but, you know, I mean, it's a case by case basis, really, right? I mean, I think in a lot of ways, I mean, if you're dealing with a smart label, they don't start throwing around numbers like that haphazardly, right? So it's like it could, you know, it should be a red flag that someone starts throwing around numbers at the onset before it even goes to paper, really. I mean, that should be almost an initial red flag of like, man, maybe this label isn't really a very good label if they're, you know, so easily throwing around financials before we get to paper. So,
you know, one thing I do see a lot and what I get artists that request of me is, you know, they want to know what's going to, you know, and of course it makes sense. They're empowered. You know, they've listened to podcasts like ours and others, and they've read books, and they want to know, you know, what they're getting, not only in terms of advances and whatnot, but what marketing is going to go into it and what have you. And the one thing I will say is, you know, it can be, especially depending where you are in your career and what leverage you have, or in this case, don't have. You know, I've watched a lot of bands want to guarantee a certain amount of marketing and, you know, stuff for video and whatever else. And those are things that, you know, you really kind of get into. That's where I see things that maybe somebody promises, you know, hey, yeah, we'll give you $10,000 for a video or, you know, videos over the course of an album. And then you don't see that in the deal itself.
Yeah. Number two, being asked to give more rights than are needed. A record label doesn't need publishing rights to distribute your music. As such, if you are being asked to provide publishing rights to the label, then you're being asked to provide more rights than are needed to accomplish the label's main function, which is distributing your music digitally and physically. Unless you're being appropriately compensated for the publishing rights and the label is the right fit to be both your distributor and your publisher, then the requirement to grant publishing rights to your label is likely excessive.
Yeah, I mean, this is so common, especially with developmental deals and many of the entry-level deals that you and I see. You know, this starts to get into the overall kind of 360 provisions in some sense. And, you know, publishing is, of course, he makes a great point. He's right. Your label isn't necessarily and does not need your publishing rights to distribute your music. And my take on that has always been, if the label's going to ask for these rights, they should compensate you, you know, in form of an additional advance, you know, in order to take them. So let's say they're going to give you, you know, they're just made up numbers, but $10,000 for your first album, and they also want your publishing, they should be willing to give you an additional amount, you know, for that right, whether it's, you know, $1,000 or $10,000, you know, that's all negotiable, but there should be some additional value placed on that. Same with merchandise and a couple other things. What is your take on it?
Yeah, I mean, for me, publishing, I mean, to really kind of break it down and simplify it, if the record label has a separate publishing company, someone in-house that actually is their sole responsibility is publishing, and they bring it up in the fact that they want your publishing, then I would treat that as a separate deal entirely. Like, hey guys, like, yeah, we'll have that conversation, but let's not cross it into the record deal. Let's treat that as a completely separate entity, but only if they have a publishing company, right? Because if it's just one person that is, they do sales, they do publishing, and they do marketing, like it's just something that they throw in the mix, chances are that's going to be a mess and you don't want to fuck with that at all. Number three, future sales advances. Labels generally ask for the option to extend their rights. The label may promise you an upfront cash advance against future sales if they decide to extend their rights, which is referred to as exercising their options. But are you automatically entitled to get an advance? the label may have written the agreement in such a way that based on prior sales, they can access those additional rights by paying you a lower advance than the number in the agreement or no advance at all.
These are things I don't see so frequently anymore. You know, most of the deals and, you know, I'm in a fortunate position. I've worked with a lot of artists over the years and I've been able to negotiate a number of deals. I like doing it. It's always been one of the more exciting parts of the business, you know, as the manager that's kind of building out the team. This is really, you know, these types of deals are the fundamental part that, you know, make sure whether or not myself, the band and our, you know, master rights exercisers, you know, rights holders are, you know, working together very well. So what I typically see is, you know, it's pretty cut and dry, but I have seen, especially in the larger deals that I've been privy to, and I've seen these on publishing deals as well. We'll take an example. Let's say, so first and foremost, you know, if you're going to do a deal for one firm album, you know, that's the first album, and then two options. It's usually pretty cut and dry. Okay, we'll give you, let's just make up the numbers here, $10,000 for the first album. And then the option, they might say it's $20,000. And so, you know, it's usually, like I said, pretty straightforward. The example of what he's saying is there might be a clause that says, well, if that first record is unrecouped, you know, by the order of whatever number, we can reduce that from your next quote-unquote advance. And you know, I'm digging a little too much into the weeds here, but I do think it's a good point for clarification. Most of the deals that I'm dealing with, the quote-unquote advance is really going to make a record anyways. It's not like the old days where, you know, you might get $100,000 for you and your four buds to go split up and buy cool stuff with and then make a record on top of it. No. You know, whatever is being deemed an advance, that's going to make your record. So there is no leftover money. But so in that case, you know, what he's referring to here is sort of that really cool example of, let's say you were going to get additional funds, you know, to put into your pocket. Obviously, the record label wouldn't, if you're unrecouped, might want to make it so you don't have as much of that. So the deals I'm seeing are, you know, they can't really strip away your ability to go make that second record if they actually want to exercise the option. Does that make sense, or did I just confuse everybody?
No, totally. And look, to me, this is one of the items that would, you know, it's a completely separate topic, but it's going into a record deal, something like this, in terms of negotiation, really is going to be based on the amount of leverage you have going into the negotiation. So if you're a band that the label really wants, something like negotiating your advances for records 2 and 3 and beyond, the more leverage that you have, meaning the more that they want you, the more that you're going to be able to get that number up. And so I'm kind of simplifying that. And like I said, it's a completely separate, you know, topic entirely, but this is one of those things that kind of comes down to negotiation, and the amount of what that is really sort of based on the amount of leverage that you have going into it.
No, absolutely. So,
you know, number 4, uncapped expenses. The formula used to determine how much money you make from music sales from the label might be gross revenue less the label's expenses multiplied by a percentage. However, without any limitation on the label's expenses, you may never get paid anything.
Yeah, I mean, that's, again, I haven't seen too many of the deals presented this way, but it absolutely makes sense. You know, and that's, it's one of those interesting things. You know, I think as we move towards this climate and culture of transparency, you're seeing less and less and less of this stuff. But, you know, major labels still exist and, you know, they're writing deals that they think make sense, you know, to them. And in fact, you know, what you want in any relationship is you don't, you know, the label, you kind of want to sign to them and hopefully you trust them and hopefully they're not abusing that trust. But inevitably, yeah, they could run and just jack those expenses up. You know, there's one label that you know, was known to do this year after year after year and, you know, had many bands sue them over the years because of things like this. It's like, you know, when it came time for royalties, it was, well, we spent all of this money, you know, on advertising. And inevitably, what they did is they spent it on advertising their own brand at the expense of the artists themselves. But inevitably, they were able to charge it back, and the bands were seemingly owed nothing. You know, left them in a perpetual state of being unrecouped. So definitely something you got to keep your eye on, whether, you know, no matter what.
Yeah, man. I mean, look, I can only caution people so far that really don't understand what this is. But to simplify, it's like, pay as close attention as possible. You know, if they're sending you an accounting statement and they're breaking down all the expenses, try and understand, you know, what the cost of, for instance, a magazine ad is, right? Because a lot of times you get these labels that will put an ad out, but then they'll tag in a bunch of other upcoming releases, but they charge each band the same amount. So they're overcharging everybody and they're billing themselves back. So you want to make sure that you know that if it's an ad that you're sharing in, that you're not taking on the burden of the entire cost, that if you're sharing it with these other bands, that there is a percentage break off of what this is. So just like I said, I'm trying to oversimplify it, but really it's coming down to keeping an eye on the things that are being spent on to your, at your expense. Because I mean, look, it takes money to make money. And you know, if you're going to put out a record, the label does need to advertise it and promote it. And there is an expense with that, but do the best that you can to keep your eye on it.
Yeah. I mean, one interesting aside, you know, from real life example, I've got an artist that, you know, makes fantastic videos, and we're always going to the label and of course trying to get the best deal possible, but these videos, you know, they're not done cheaply. And so then it comes time for the statement, and you know, potentially we're unrecouped or we're not making as much money as we want, and they start to ask questions, and you know, I have to turn and say, well, you know, think about it, all of these things that we've driven the label to do, you know, on our end, they've paid for. And inevitably, mm-hmm. those are recoupable expenses. You know, and in the deal, sometimes that stuff is 50% recoupable or 100% recoupable. Again, it all comes back to your leverage. But it's understanding as you're pushing and pressing for somebody to, like you said, spend money, you know, to grow your, you know, your brand, inevitably, you know, they're fronting that money. You're the one paying for it in the end.
Yep. Number five. Not getting it in writing. What do you want the label to do? Spend some money on marketing and promotion? If they aren't willing to put their verbal commitment in writing, maybe the label isn't going to do what they verbally promised.
Ah, so this is what I was getting to a little bit earlier, and I had looked at this, you know, before we went in and skimmed over it and missed it because it's relatively small on the notes that, you know, you and I go off of. But yeah, I mean, this is always so tough. You know, I'm actually in the middle of a deal with an artist, and you know, the manager who I like, and you know, the young band who I think is great, you know, they actually came to us and said, what are you going to do marketing wise? And we, you know, I went to my partners and we developed what we consider to be a great plan, and we're presenting that plan to them, but we're not going to put that actually in the deal itself. I almost never, ever, ever see that get put in there. And in some senses, even as we're talking about it, I'm like, well, why wouldn't we? I mean, that's what we say we're going to do, right? So we should commit to it. But I don't find it standard practice that people get into the weeds and the details on exactly what they're going to do. Oh, we're going to do, you know, $500 in Facebook ads or whatever that might be. Now, we might set a minimum marketing expense, or we might say, you know, we will provide marketing that's mutually agreed upon between, you know, the label and the artist. But you know, so it can be, I don't know, this is one of those challenging ones to me. Again, I typically operate, and again, you and I are in a fortunate position because we typically know the people we're hopping into bed with for our bands. But, you know, if I go sign a deal with one of the labels that you and I know the people and respect and have seen what they do for their other artists, I give them the benefit of the doubt that they're, like you said, they're going to want to, you know, they're signing the band, they're spending money on the record, they're going to want to market it. Why would they not go and do the marketing? So,
yeah, I always find that labels tend to be a little gun shy about putting a price tag on things like marketing, where it's a little bit of a nebulous sort of gray area. But once again, this comes back to my earlier point of, if you're going into a situation where you have more leverage, then those are things that you can get in your record deal. If you're coming into a situation with a lower level of leverage, those things you might just have to, you know, just kind of like hope that, you know, and understand that, well, it's a record label and they're putting out your record. They don't want it to fail any more than you do. So that you just have to trust the fact that they're going to put in a minimal amount of effort in there. And, you know, a lot of it in the early stages is really up to the band, and a lot of times too. So, you know, a lot, like I said, it comes down to a matter of leverage. And if you don't have a lot of leverage, then it just kind of is what it is. And you just got to roll with it and hope for the best a lot of times.
Yeah, completely. I mean, it's tough because I think we've both watched bands, or we've been involved with bands who, you know, they get excited, they get signed to a label. The label does essentially the minimum. You know, they go and then if it doesn't take off, or they're not seeing clear signs of it, you know, moving in the direction they want it to, they just quit spending. And that's always a frustrating place to be. I mean, that is where the value of a great manager comes in. I was chuckling to myself. I mean, there's an artist that I don't work with any longer, but, you know, they're out. I see them. They seem to be doing semi-decently, and they're on a label that, you know, are owned by friends of mine. And I remember when they were going to drop the band, you know, and I had to make the call to say, you can't do that. You know, inevitably, they ended up keeping them. I had quit working with the band, and now they're both having success. And I'm sitting there scratching my head like, how is it that, you know, I'm the one guy that saved this thing from happening and I'm not still involved? But that is the type of thing that can happen. You know, you can get where a label has spent some money on you. They don't see it moving the direction that they wanted it to. And so they quit spending money on you. And you know, that's always a tough thing for an artist to take. And there is, there's just a fine line, a delicate balance in that space.
Yeah. I mean, look, the bottom line here, people, is that it's a business, and record labels are a business, and they don't look at you as people. They look at you as a product, and your relationship with them as people is going to be as great as your product does. And if your product does not do great, they don't really care so much about you as people. But if your product does amazing, then they will invite you over for tea at noon, you know. So that's totally just the way that works. Number six, no provision to get details. The label is responsible to pay you. As such, they should also have an obligation to give you details about how they calculated your payment. Also, you should have the ability to make sure the numbers are accurate by having the right to take a look at the label's records, referred to as an audit.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. I mean, this has to be in there. And I have to admit that there's an artist that I work with that, you know, I didn't name the label. I mentioned that there's a label out there, you know, that ran up expenses. But, you know, I had an artist that survived a 5-year deal with that label. And inevitably, by the time we were in a position, you know, to try to go audit them, the provision had said that it had expired. So meaning, you know, by the time the band was very cautious, they didn't want to try to do anything while they were on the label for fear that the label would sabotage things. And then finally, once we got off the label and found ourselves in a position where we could really wrap our heads around it, the people we were consulting said, you realize that on your biggest record, you know, the statute of limitations, which is essentially, you know, the amount of time on the audit provision, had expired. So we were sitting there just banging our heads against the wall. We're like, mother effer, you know, like, how is it that even though that provision is there, they've limited it so much that by the time we were empowered enough to take action, we had no method of recourse. And so, you know, these are things that you only find from experience, and that's what makes Blasco and I good at what we do, you know, if we do say so ourselves. But also that's, you know, the value of having a great attorney look over something, an experienced attorney. They might have gone through something similar and know, okay, cool, we need an audit provision and we need to make sure that it's, you know, a certain number of years or whatever that may be.
Yes, and on this topic, if you are in the position and you feel it's necessary to audit your record label and your provision is intact and it goes back the correct amount of years to be able to you know, look under the hood, mathematically speaking, it's not cheap, right? So the cost of an auditor, there is an expense attached to that. So you want to make sure as best as you can by the power of deduction that you're going to uncover more money than is going to be the cost of the auditor, A. But B, you also need to make sure that this is a label that has the ability to pay you whatever the auditor uncovers, right? So does any of that make sense? You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. It's sort of, yeah, I mean, exactly. If we find that something is wrong, you know, we shouldn't have to eat that. You should have to eat it. You're the guys that were doing something wrong. I love it. I you know, it's one of these where I don't know if this is exactly who it's attributed to, but I was told that, you know, Bruce Springsteen audited his label every year. And when asked why, he said, because there's never been a time, you know, that we found out that they'd paid us too much. You know, like, yep. It's not necessarily that, you know, maybe from year to year they were spot on, but, you know, there was other years where they weren't paid what they were supposed to, but there was never a time that we, you know, they looked back and the label said, oh, our bad, Mr. Springsteen. We actually gave you, you know, $200 million more than we should have.
Yeah, no way. Number seven, and the final number, lack of clear termination provisions. If there isn't a clear way for you to get out of the contract, you will wish you had a way out, including if the label isn't paying you what you are entitled to receive but are still selling your music. Also, if you're told a label agreement is take it or leave it and the label won't answer your questions about the agreement, they may not be the most trusted partner. On a brighter note, if you read a record label agreement before signing, get some assistance from fellow musicians and or a music lawyer, and the label is willing to discuss and reasonably negotiate the agreement, it may be a start of a beautiful relationship.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've got some deals that I've put together with artists that I'm incredibly fond of. You know, I've got other ones where I felt that things were out of balance almost from the get-go. You know, when I first started managing artists, I inherited bands, or, you know, the artists I started work with came with the deals that were, you know, already associated with them. And it's easy to, you know, it's sort of like armchair quarterbacking or whatever they call it, you know, the next day when you look back and say, well, I would have played the game differently. Well, you know, unfortunately, the game's already been played. And so I had to find ways to work within the confines of the deals that had been done. And it can be a huge struggle. You know, I remember one artist in particular that the label had given them an advance. You know, like I said earlier, the advance went to make the record. So let's say they got $10,000. They paid a producer for that. And then they gave the band an additional advance for pub rights and merch rights. But that's what the band used to live off of while they were in the studio. You know, so inevitably, you know, going in, they'd already spent all that cash, not even on like buying a van or getting gear. So by the time I got involved, all those things still had to be done. Thankfully, I was able to go put together some other deals, you know, some merchandise deals and things like that gave us an advance, but we were sitting in a large hole. So, you know, what I like is when I've had the opportunity to, you know, to know the provisions of a deal going in, because then let's say you're sitting there on album two and something's not going right, I can at least know that I agreed to it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I don't know. I don't think labels are sharks, you know, in general. I do think that, you know, some of them employ practices that, you know, that are sort of antiquated in some capacities. And, you know, they sit there by, you know, and again, I've got a label now. And so I always try to keep this in check. Part of the reason I started my label was, you know, hopefully to support artists in a friendlier manner than I've seen as a whole across the board. But got a lot of great bands on great labels that are super supportive. And I hope all of you out there can aspire to, you know, be in that same position at some point in your careers.
Hell yes. Well, that concludes episode 24. Thanks to everyone for tuning in. We will be back here next week. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Blasco1313. We encourage you to email us any questions or comments you may have for the podcast to me directly at askblasco@gmail.com. Because, hey, people, we do this show for you. Consider it a tool for understanding this ever so challenging and confusing business of music. If you have listened this far, much respect to you for making efforts to educate yourselves and taking your future into your own hands. Mike, any final parting thoughts?
Thanks to everyone for continuing to listen to what we have going on here. And I've seen some very nice tweets in recent times. I am at Mike O'Loop on Twitter as well as Instagram. Someone shouted out to us just today about, you know, what a great job they think we're doing, which is always nice and refreshing to hear. So, you know, if you do like what you hear, please spread the word, tell a friend, rate and review us wherever you listen to podcasts. And as you will have heard in the drop at the beginning of the show, I have my next round of coaching courses up. Release It Right and Unleash It Right are both out there in the world for you to sign up for. I'm excited about them. 60 days assignable just ended, and that one was incredible. We're probably going to do that again in September, October, so keep your eyes peeled for that. But Blasco, thank you once again for always finding what I find to be really relevant and fun topics to discuss with you. So on that note, people, enjoy your wonderful summer. And hopefully you cross paths with either Blasco or I, or maybe both, if you're at the APMA.
So. Right on. Thanks, everybody.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Freights from the Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective, the only podcast you crank up to 11. Oh.